Homo Deus, a brief history of tomorrow. This is part 3, Homo sapiens loses control. Chapter 8, the time bomb in the laboratory. In 2016, the world is dominated by the liberal package of individualism, human rights, democracy, and the free market. Yet, 21st century science is undermining the foundations of the liberal order. Because science does not deal with questions of value, it cannot determine whether liberals are right in valuing liberty more than equality, or in valuing the individual more than the collective. However, like every other religion, liberalism too is based on what it believes to be factual statements, in addition to abstract ethical judgments. And these factual statements just do not stand up to rigorous scientific scrutiny. Liberals value individual liberty so much because they believe that humans have free will. According to liberalism, the decisions of voters and customers are neither deterministic nor random. People are, of course, influenced by external forces and chance events, but at the end of the day, each of us can wave the magic wand of freedom and decide things for ourselves. This is the reason liberalism give so much importance to voters and customers and instruct us to follow our heart and do what feels good. It is our free will that imbues the universe with meaning, and since no outsider can know how you really feel or predict your choices for sure, you should not trust any big brother to look after your interests and desires. Attributing free will to humans is not an ethical judgment. It purports to be a factual description of the world. Although this so-called factual description might have made sense back in the days of Locke, Rousseau, and Thomas Jefferson, it does not sit well with the latest findings of the life sciences. The contradiction between free will and contemporary science is the elephant in the laboratory, whom many prefer not to see as they peer into their microscopes and fMRI scanners. In the 18th century, Homo sapiens was like a mysterious black box whose inner workings were beyond our grasp. Hence, when scholars asked why a man drew a knife and stabbed another to death, an acceptable answer said, because he chose to. He used his free will to choose murder, which is why he's fully responsible for his crime. Over the last century, as scientists opened up the sapiens black box, they discovered there neither soul, no free will nor self, but only genes, hormones, and neurons that obey the same physical and chemical laws governing the rest of reality. Today, when scholars ask why a man drew a knife and stabbed someone to death, answering because he chose to does not cut the mustard. Instead, geneticists and brain scientists provide a much more detailed answer. He did it due to such and such electrochemical processes in the brain, which were shaped by a particular genetic makeup, which reflect ancient evolutionary pressures coupled with chance mutations. The electrochemical brain processes that result in murder are either deterministic or random or a combination of both, but they are never free. For example, when a neuron fires an electric charge, this may either be a deterministic reaction to external stimuli, or it might be the outcome of a random event such as the spontaneous decomposition of a radioactive atom. Neither option leaves any room for free will. Decisions reached through a chain reaction of biochemical events, each determined by a previous event, are certainly not free. Decisions resulting from random subatomic accidents are not free either. They are just random. And when random accidents combine with deterministic processes, we get probabilistic outcomes. But this too does not amount to freedom. Suppose we build a robot whose central processing unit is linked to a radioactive lump of uranium. When choosing between two options, say press the right button or the left button, the robot counts the number of uranium atoms that decayed during the previous minute. If the number is even, it presses the right button. If the number is odd, the left button. We can never be certain about the actions of such a robot, but nobody would call this contraption free, and we would not dream of allowing it to vote in democratic elections or holding it legally responsible for its actions. To the best of our scientific understanding, determinism and randomness have divided the entire cake between them, leaving them not even a crumb for freedom. The sacred word freedom turns out to be, just like soul, an empty term that carries no discernible meaning. Free will exists only in the imaginary stories we humans have invented. The last nail in freedom's coffin is provided by the theory of evolution. Just as evolution cannot be squared with eternal souls, neither can it swallow the idea of free will. For if humans are free, how could natural selection have shaped them? According to the theory of evolution, all the choices animals make, whether of residence, food, or mates, reflect their genetic code. If, thanks to its fit genes, an animal chooses to eat a nutritious mushroom and copulate with healthy and fertile mates, these genes pass on to the next generation. If, because of unfit genes, an animal chooses poisonous mushrooms and anemic mates, these genes become extinct. However, if an animal freely chooses what to eat and with whom to mate, the natural selection is left with nothing to work on. When confronted with such scientific explanations, people often brush them aside, pointing out that they feel free and that they act according to their own wishes and decisions. This is true. Humans act according to their desires. If by free will you mean the ability to act according to your desires, then yes, humans have free will. And so do chimpanzees, dogs, and parrots. When Polly wants a cracker, Polly eats a cracker. But the million-dollar question is not whether parrots and humans can act out their inner desires. The question is whether they can choose their desires in the first place. Why does Polly want a cracker rather than a cucumber? Why do I decide to kill my annoying neighbor instead of turning the other cheek? Why do I want to buy the red car rather than the black? Why do I prefer voting for the Conservatives rather than the Labour Party? I don't choose any of these wishes. I feel a particular wish welling up within me because this is the feeling created by the biochemical processes in my brain. These processes might be deterministic or random, but not free. You might reply that at least in the case of major decisions, such as murdering a neighbor or electing a government, my choice does not reflect a momentary feeling, but the long and reasoned contemplation of weighty arguments. However, there are many possible trains of arguments I could follow, some of which will cause me to vote Conservative, others to vote Labour, and still others to vote UKIP, and still others to vote UKIP, or just stay at home. What makes me board one train of reasoning rather than another? In the Paddington of my brain, I may be compelled to get on a particular train of reasoning by deterministic processes, or I may embark at random. But I do not freely choose to think those thoughts that will make me vote Conservative. These are not just hypotheses or philosophical speculations. Today we can use brain scanners to predict people's desires and decisions well before they are aware of them. In one kind of experiment, people are placed within a huge brain scanner holding a switch in each hand. They are asked to press one of the two switches whenever they feel like it. Scientists observing neural activity in the brain can predict which switch the person will press well before the person actually does so, and even before the person is aware of their own intention. Neural events in the brain indicating the person's decision begin from a few hundred milliseconds to a few seconds before the person is aware of this choice. The decision to press either the right or left switch certainly reflected the person's choice, yet it was not a free choice. In fact, our belief in free will results from faulty logic. When a biochemical chain reaction makes me desire to press the right switch, I feel that I really want to press the right switch. And this is true. I really want to press it. Yet people erroneously jump to the conclusion that if I want to press it, I choose to want to. This is, of course, false. I don't choose my desires. I only feel them and act accordingly. People nevertheless go on arguing about free will because even scientists all too often continue to use outdated theological concepts. Christian, Muslim, and Jewish theologians debated for centuries the relations between the soul and the will. They assumed that every human has an internal inner essence called the soul, which is my true self. They further maintained that this self possesses various desires, just as it possesses clothes, vehicles, and houses. I allegedly choose my desires in the same way I choose my clothes, and my fate is determined according to these choices. If I choose good desires, I go to heaven. If I choose bad desires, I am sent to hell. The question then arose, how exactly do I choose my desires? Why, for example, did Eve desire to eat the forbidden fruit the snake offered her? Was this desire forced upon her? Did this desire just pop up within her by pure chance? Or did she choose it freely? If she did not choose it freely, why punish her for it? However, once we accept that there is no soul and that humans have no inner essence called the self, it no longer makes sense to ask, how does the self choose its desires? It's like asking a bachelor, how does your wife choose her clothes? In reality, there is only a stream of consciousness, and desires arise and pass within this stream. But there is no permanent self who owns the desires. Hence, it is meaningless to ask whether I choose my desires deterministically, randomly, or freely. It may sound extremely complicated, but it is surprisingly easy to test this idea. Next time a thought pops up in your mind, stop and ask yourself, why did I think this particular thought? Did I decide a minute ago to think this thought, and only then did I think it? Or did it just arise in my mind without my permission or instruction? If I am indeed the master of my thoughts and decisions, can I decide not to think about anything at all for the next 60 seconds? Just try and see what happens. Doubting free will is not just a philosophical exercise, it has practical implications. If organisms indeed lack free will, it implies we could manipulate and even control their desires using drugs, genetic engineering, or direct brain stimulation. If you want to see philosophy in action, pay a visit to a robot rat laboratory. A robo-rat is a run-of-the-mill rat with a twist. Scientists have implanted electrodes into the sensory and reward areas in the rat's brain. This enables the scientist to maneuver the rat by remote control. After short training sessions, researchers have managed not only to make the rat turn left or right, but also to climb ladders, sniff around garbage piles, and do things that rats normally dislike, such as jumping from great heights. Armies and corporations show keen interest in the robo-rats, hoping they could prove useful in many tasks and situations. For example, robo-rats could help detect survivors trapped under collapsed buildings, locate bombs and booby traps, and map underground tunnels and caves. Animal welfare activists have voiced concern about the suffering of such experiments inflict on the rats. Professor Talwar of the State University of New York, one of the leading robo-rat researchers, has dismissed these concerns, arguing that the rats actually enjoy the experiments. After all, explains Talwar, the rats work for pleasure, and when the electrodes stimulate the reward center in their brain, the rat feels nirvana. To the best of our understanding, the rat doesn't feel that somebody else controls her, and she does not feel that she is being coerced to do something against her will. When Professor Talwar presses the remote control, the rat wants to move to the left, which is why she moves to the left. When the professor presses another switch, the rat wants to climb a ladder, which is why she climbs the ladder. After all, the rat's desires are nothing but a pattern of firing neurons. What does it matter whether the neurons are firing because they are stimulated by other neurons or because they are stimulated by transplanted electrodes connected to Professor Talwar's remote control? If you ask the rat about it, she might well have told you, sure, I have free will. Look, I want to turn left and I turn left. I want to climb a ladder and I climb a ladder. Doesn't that prove that I have free will? Experiments performed on Homo sapiens indicate that, like rats, humans too can be manipulated, and that it is possible to create or annihilate even complex feelings such as love, anger, fear, and depression by stimulating the right spots in the human brain. The US military has recently initiated experiments on implanting computer chips in people's brains, hoping to use this method to treat soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. In Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem, doctors have pioneered a novel treatment for patients suffering from acute depression. They implant electrodes into the patient's brain and wire the electrodes to a minuscule computer implanted into the patient's breast. On receiving a command from the computer, the electrodes use weak electric currents to paralyze the brain area responsible for the depression. The treatment does not always succeed, but in some cases, patients reported that the feeling of dark emptiness that tormented them throughout their lives disappeared as if by magic. One patient complained that several months after the operation, he had a relapse and was overcome by severe depression. Upon inspection, the doctors found the source of the problem. The computer's battery had run out of power. Once they changed the battery, the depression quickly melted away. Due to obvious ethical restrictions, researchers implant electrodes into human brains only under special circumstances. Hence, most relevant experiments on humans are conducted using non-intrusive helmet-like devices, technically known as transcranial direct current stimulators. The helmet is fitted with electrodes that attach to the scalp from outside. It produces weak electromagnetic fields and directs them towards specific brain areas, thereby stimulating or inhibiting select brain activities. The American military experiments with such helmets in the hope of sharpening the focus and enhancing the performance of soldiers, both in training sessions and on the battlefield. The main experiments are conducted in the Human Effectiveness Directorate, which is located in an Ohio Air Force base. Though the results are far from conclusive, and though the hype around transcranial stimulators currently runs far ahead of actual achievements, several studies have indicated that the method may indeed enhance the cognitive abilities of drone operators, air traffic controllers, snipers, and other personnel whose duties require them to remain highly attentive for extended periods. Sally Addy, a journalist for The New Scientist, was allowed to visit a training facility for snipers and test the effects herself. At first, she entered a battlefield simulator without wearing the transcranial helmet. Sally describes how fear swept over her as she saw 20 masked men strapped with suicide bombs and armed with rifles charge straight towards her. "For everyone I managed to shoot dead," writes Sally, "three new assailants pop up from nowhere. I'm clearly not shooting fast enough, and panic and incompetence are making me continually jam my rifle." Luckily for her, the assailants were just video images projected on huge screens all around her. Still, she was so disappointed with her poor performance that she felt like putting down the rifle and leaving the simulator. Then they wired her up to the helmet. She reports feeling nothing unusual except a slight tingle and a strange metallic taste in her mouth. Yet she began picking off the terrorists one by one as coolly and methodically as if she were Rambo or Clint Eastwood. "As 20 of them run at me brandishing their guns, I calmly line up my rifle, take a moment to breathe deeply, and pick off the closest one, before tranquilly assessing my next target. In what seems like next to no time, I hear a voice call out, 'Okay, that's it.' The lights come up in the simulation room. In the sudden quiet amid the bodies around me, I was really expecting more assailants, and I'm a bit disappointed when the team begins to remove my electrodes. I look up and wonder if someone wound the clocks forward. Inexplicably, 20 minutes have just passed. 'How many did I get?' I ask the assistant. She looks at me quizzically. 'All of them.' The experiment changed Sally's life. In the following days, she realized she has been through a near spiritual experience. What defined the experience was not feeling smarter or learning faster. The thing that made the earth drop out from under my feet was that for the first time in my life, everything in my head finally shut up. My brain without self-doubt was a revelation. There was suddenly this incredible silence in my head. I hope you can sympathize with me when I tell you that the thing I wanted most acutely for the weeks following my experience was to go back and strap on those electrodes. I also started to have a lot of questions. Who was I apart from the angry bitter gnomes that populate my mind and drive me to failure because I'm too scared to try? And where did those voices come from? Some of those voices repeat society's prejudices, some echo our personal history, and some articulate our genetic legacy. All of them together, say Sally, create an invisible story that shapes our conscious decisions in ways we seldom grasp. What would happen if we could rewrite our inner monologues, or even silence them completely on occasion? As of 2016, transcranial stimulators are still in their infancy, and it is unclear if and when they will become a mature technology. So far, they provide only enhanced capabilities for short durations, and even Sally Addy's 20-minute experience may be quite exceptional, or perhaps even the outcome of the notorious placebo effect. Most published studies of transcranial stimulators are based on very small samples of people operating under special circumstances, and the long-term effects and hazards are completely unknown. However, if the technology does mature, or if some other method is found to manipulate the brain's electric patterns, what would it do to human societies and to human beings? People may well manipulate their brains' electric circuits, not just in order to shoot terrorists, but also to achieve more mundane liberal goals, namely to study and work more efficiently, immerse ourselves in games and hobbies, and be able to focus on what interests us at any particular moment, be it maths or football. However, if and when such manipulations become routine, the supposedly free will of customers will become just another product we can buy. You want to master the piano, but whenever practice time comes, you actually prefer to watch television? No problem. Just put on the helmet, install the right software, and you will be downright aching to play the piano. You may counter-argue that the ability to silence or enhance the voices in your head will actually strengthen rather than undermine your free will. Presently, you often fail to realize your most cherished and authentic desires due to external distractions. With the help of the attention helmet and similar devices, you could more easily silence the alien voices of priests, spin doctors, advertisers, and neighbors and focus on what you want. However, as we will shortly see, the notion that you have a single self and that you could therefore distinguish your authentic desires from alien voices is just another liberal myth, debunked by the latest scientific research.
That's it for today. I create a lot of content, I run a debating podcast, I write stories, I film videos with a drone, and I run many other projects too. If you'd like to stay informed of things I do, sign up to my private newsletter. It's free. Head to bit.ly/newslettersebastian, all attached and in lowercase. Thank you for listening.